You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 544, I think. And I will check right now, and I'm going to keep recording because I think it is five. Yes, this is episode 544. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile. We're rapidly approaching 550. We've got a battle plan in effect and more. The battle plan for episode 550. We're going to each tell three stories. And I think, and give me your opinion here, I think we should each have three categories, and each person tells a story in that category, such as funny, sad, and or poignant, and weird, or something like that. What do you think of having there's a category, and we each tell one story from that category. And what do you think of those three categories I just pitched right now?
I like the category idea, and I like the three, because it's like I wasn't sure which ones, you know, what I was going to talk about. So that actually, like, really helps narrows everything down. I'm in favor of the categories.
And we are also here with Hallie Bullitt. Hallie Bullitt, what do you think of the story idea? What do you think of having categories? And what do you think of the three proposed categories?
I mean, I've been pushing for the story show because I'm, like, psyched to hear your guys' stories. So I'm totally into that. And, yeah, those categories are, like, perfectly, like, they give you a little bit of direction, but they're just vague enough that you could kind of tell any stories you wanted.
Yeah, right. And the question is, should they be music related, or do they not have to be music related? Honestly, I think my best stories maybe aren't music related, to tell you the truth.
Then I don't think we should put parameters on it.
Fair enough. It'll just be story time. Fair enough.
Mine will probably be music stories. Otherwise, like, I could, you know, just to make sure that my stories are interesting to the people that listen to this podcast, because I don't know if they want to, like, hear all the crazy stories I have about all the other, like, weird aspects of my life. I'll probably try to stick to music. Who knows? Maybe I'll veer wildly. I don't know. You don't know what I'm gonna do.
One thing that's always at the forefront of our mind is making sure it's something the listeners want to hear, such as when I talk about finding some obscure record that no one cares about in the dollar bin, and I wax on it for 20 minutes about how you can get it for $15 on Discogs, but I got it for $1. So if you really look, you can find it for $1. All right, well, listen.
But I'm already thinking, and I'm definitely going to not stick with the thing that I said, because I've already mentioned on the podcast that I really want to tell the story of the time that I ended up at Whoopi Goldberg's birthday party. Yes. So I'm probably definitely going to tell that, and it has absolutely nothing to do with music.
Honestly, like, I thought I had some good stories. I think my stories are going to get nuked by half. I think Hallie's probably gonna have, like, the best stories, honestly. Like,
yeah. No, don't set me up like that. I do have crazy, ridiculous. I've led an absolutely ridiculous life, you guys. Like, my life is cartoonishly ridiculous. I do have good stories. I don't know that I'll pick the best ones. I'll have to think about it. And then, you know, sometimes the story is great and then you tell it and it just doesn't land, you know? That happens sometimes. That's happened to all of us.
Now I would have to update my game because all my stories are like, oh, that one time I thought it was a third press crash record, but it turned out to be a first. Wow. Damn. All right, well, dang, I got to go back to the drawing board. I might have bit off more than I can chew. Speaking of biting off more than you can chew, you can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. We got a lot of mail because we haven't done mail in a while, so I'm just going to do some of the mail. And I'm pulling up that mail right now. And this first mail is from Daniel, who's written in before, I think. He titled this email, Joystick Blah, Ska, Yeah. So I just heard your unimpressed reaction to Joystick, which is fine because while I'm an enormous ska nerd, you've read a few of my emails about it over the years. I didn't care for that album much either. But consequently, I really feel you equated this one tepid response to one new ska album and video as an omen of doom for the active ska scene. As if all new ska must be held accountable to each individual ska band and release. I don't think I've ever heard you guys have a negative or tepid response to any other new work in another subgenre and say something like, well, this new Jello track isn't what I hoped. I guess punk is on its way out. Why is all ska graded on a curve by outsiders and normies to the scene? I just don't get it. I understand why people don't like ska. I understand Hallie's reaction that she just doesn't like the genre, but I don't get dragging the whole genre and scene based on one release. Even if you have the experience of the third wave ska wars, the explosion of ska in the third wave was about 2 or 3 years at most. That's about 5% of ska's time existing on this planet. Time to let go of those 2 summers and just enjoy the new albums. Or don't. And then Daniel included a meme. Rejecting all of ska punk, let alone all of ska, because of what you've seen done by white teenagers in the late 1990s and Christian bands is like rejecting all music because of that experience you had at a Nickelback concert. And that's from Daniel. And Google suggestion says, here are my 3 responses that Google email suggests. I agree with you. Wow.
I love the wow. Can you imagine if you just wrote back, wow, and that was like your only response?
Basically, that, it could be like, wow, or it could be like, wow. You know, like it could be positive or negative. But listen, Daniel, in a way, you're right. But on the other hand, Scott does sort of get all looped together because there's really not that many ska bands. There's like way more hardcore bands. There's way more just 77 street punk bands. There's way more, you know, death rock bands than there are ska bands. And so I think people tend to see them all. And honestly, if you read any article about ska, it's like the same 7 bands are named. You know, We Are the Union, Kill Lincoln, Cat Bite, Amazing Band, Omnigon, Bite Me Bambi, Joystick, and like Bad Operation and 1 or 2 others. And the reason is because in the ska scene, those are kind of the best ones, honestly. And I think they are the best ones in the ska scene. And so I think people just use those bands as markers for ska as a whole. And honestly, I kind of think it's fair to tie all of ska to those bands because I think any ska you find – because ska is such a template-based genre in that – either you do what you do in ska, or if you don't do that anymore, then you're not ska anymore. It's like grindcore. Like grindcore has very strict rules. And if you break those rules, well, then you're not really grindcore anymore. I think ska is kind of like that. So I think that's why people kind of treat ska as this monolithic genre, because the rules of the genre are less flexible to be considered strictly one of those kinds of bands. Emma, what do you think?
I think there should be a grindcore ska band, because I would listen to that. I think that would be hilarious.
It's called Choking Victim!
Yes!
There's only like one grindcore Choking Victim / Leftover Crack track, honestly. But
I really appreciate this letter, this email. I think were I doing that, were I just like dismissing an entire genre, I would want to be called out on it in the way that this like listener is doing. I will defend myself without, I don't think, getting too defensive. I absolutely love ska. Like, I love ska. Ska was so, so, so important to me for like a chunk of my life. And So I don't dismiss the genre at all. I have like a lot of love for the genre. I think the reason that I and a lot of people kind of had to like turn our back on ska for a little while was like because it had kind of just turned into Bowling for Soup, right? Which was just like I wasn't interested in that. It struck me as just a little corny and a little reductive, and I wasn't into it. It wasn't like the kind of ska that I liked, and I guess like. I think you have to like put this in context. I don't know how much. Sorry, I hate saying the listener. Sorry, I just I'm
Daniel.
Daniel, I don't know if Daniel has listened to like a lot of the episodes we've done lately. I think like there's a context, which is that I think we keep talking about specifically new ska bands. Where it just sort of seems like they've kind of picked up the ball where like bands like Bowling for Soup left off. Like they've picked up there, like rather than picking up with some of the stuff that was from like a little bit earlier in the third wave, like movement, the stuff that I liked a little bit better. So I listen to everything hoping that I'll like it. I'm never just like, oh, it's another new Scott. Like I don't like people that listen to music like that or people that are like, you know, music fans that way where they just like, I really try to like listen to everything with open ears and I am like dying for like a new ska thing to blow me away. I'm here. I'm ready for that. Somebody come and like blow me away. But then the other thing that I've said is that maybe just like this is maybe I at my phase in my life, maybe this isn't the ska phase in my life, but I'm so glad I had that phase. And if that's what this music is for younger people, then I'm glad they have that, you know? And that was a long spiel, but that's my response.
You know, I'm going to slightly backtrack on myself. And I frequently beat up the young people because I'm like, why is all the young people music so melancholy? Why is it so gentle sounding? At least many of the ska bands are loud and obnoxious, which I enjoy. So I certainly will give the new ska bands that. Okay, this is from Bernice. Yes, it is so good to hear Gethard on the Punk News podcast again. I remember when Punk News interviewed him years ago and he had an angry edge. He seems mellower now. I wonder if success has brought him to a better mental space. I watched his special on your recommendation and it was great. The alligator part was great. I think you should have guests on more often. Also, the 90s were great. John is just wrong. From Bernice. This is from Francis. Why did John keep forcing that joke about Alexander the Great on Chris? He clearly was not into it. That was weird. Stop it. And that's from Francis.
I would argue that Chris was kind of into it only because he's such a history buff. But maybe not. Maybe the listener was sensing I wasn't sensing.
Well, I did force that into the conversation, but sometimes I do enjoy forcing bizarre questions into the conversation just to disrupt, you know. So, but anyways, I'm certainly glad it was on, and it is a testament to Chris that unlike Mira, Chris was able to roll with the punches and fire back and critique Alexander's strategy, whereas Mira could not. But I don't mean to dog on Mira. Years ago, when I really first started doing interviews, and I don't really do this anymore. I would ask people like wacky questions at the end just to be like silly, but it's point. You know, you never really get a good answer out of it. And I said to her, "Black Flag or Digital Underground?" And she did not like that question at all, and she refused to answer it. So Chris rolled with the punches, much to Chris's credit. But listen, the dude is a comedy master, a stand-up master, and the dude is very skilled, as his interview show. This is one more. I don't know who it's from. I enjoyed the interview with Chris Gethard. He's so good at talking. He's just unassuming, and even though it sounded like he's just talking, he's actually really captivating. The Chris Gethard show got me through some tough times, and things are a little better now, and I'm glad Chris seems like he's in a better place too. Thank you for all the great feels. And then we have one more letter here, and this is from – I lost it. Here we go. I have it. Where is it? Jason. Jason's written in a whole bunch of times. No subject from Jason. I think NoFX should play because no one was offended at that concert. The internet just made a big deal about it after the fact. And I'll say I basically agree with Jason's statement. I believe Callie and Em were a bit more nuanced.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. I'm not, I don't know. Yeah, I thought the statement was, I thought it was mean. I thought it was mean-spirited. Again, we talked about like that sometimes you're on stage and just a thing comes out of your mouth and you didn't have a lot of time to like think about it beforehand. I think it was a little mean. That's just my take on it. But I totally believe that. Well, I don't know. Is this person saying they were at that show? Like, do they know that no one was upset by it? That seems like kind of like a statement you can't really back up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, fair enough. Well, fair enough. But regardless, I agree with Jason's general perspective. Jason was on the Punk News podcast years ago when we would do live game shows. And if I remember, he's the guy that like just crushed everyone. And we almost kind of stopped doing game shows just because he was just beating the crap out of everybody. And we're like, everyone, like the two other contestants are having a bad time because they're getting whipped so badly. So I think that was Jason that just like dominated everybody. So anyway, Jason, always a pleasure to have you write in. You can always use that podcast at punknews.org. Hallie Bolt, play a tune and we'll come back and we'll do the news.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so this is a band that I have, like, a lot of crossover with. So this band, they went to my college. I won't tell you how many years after I was there. and then we were also on the same label for a while. So they were on they're on Father Daughter Records. And so this is a band called Remember Sports. They used to just be called Sports, and then there was another band called Sports, and then they changed their name to Remember Sports. And I would say that this falls into maybe like the, like, I don't know, I like this band because they're kind of weird. They're a little bit hard to define. Definitely some of it is just kind of like spazzy college folk, right? Like spazzy college folk, if that makes sense. And then, and then definitely some of it's a little bit punkier. And I don't know, I enjoy this band a lot. They have a new-ish album out that's called Like a Stone. And I just like this singer, Carmen Perry. I just love her voice. I think her voice is like sick. And this is probably the punkiest of the songs on this album, I would say, in my estimation. And this song is called Falling Awake.
I can't pull my head from under covers, taking over my skin. Hurts to be the one I'm guessing. Pressure's pressing. Are you gonna keep it? There's to say, all it ever does is never go away. I need you right now, need you right now, need you right now, need you right now. And if I pick apart the reasons, I keep coming back like seasons, changing right before. Walking to your house in the middle of the night. I want to see you every day. When I'm falling away, you know I don't believe in anything you say. I need you right now. I need you right now.
And that was Remember Sports, formerly known as Sports, doing Remember Awake.
Falling awake,
as opposed to falling asleep. Yes. Okay, let's hit the news. We sort of heralded this with a discussion maybe a couple of months ago, but here's the story. Teenage Bottle Rocket is doing a show in Florida, in St. Petersburg. It's at the VFW, but here's the kicker. If you are vaccinated and provide proof of your vaccination, tickets are $18. If you are not vaccinated or refuse to provide proof of vaccination, you can still go, but tickets are $999.99. The promoter issued a long statement, and he basically said it's not a moral judgment he's not trying to make a point. He's just saying it's strictly a business decision that if there are unvaccinated people there, that means other people won't show up. So it's strictly business, and we don't have any political or point or Weisenheimer point otherwise. This was very divisive. A lot of the people that it was divisive with it is the anti-vaxxers, which, like, you know, anytime we post like any kind of like political thing, or even somehow medicine is political these days, but like all these weird accounts just like pop up at Punk News, like people we've never seen before, and they, you know, they throw out these like fake statistics and stuff. And anyway, anytime we do anything about like Hillary Clinton or anything, like all these weird people pop up, and it's like, do you just like Google like Hillary Clinton all day or something? I don't know. Anyways, but even not with those people, this was somewhat controversial. I've got very strong opinions here. I don't know if you guys want me to kick it off or if someone else wants to kick it off.
I personally love when you kick it off with a good, strong opinion.
All right. This is dumb. I hate it. Here's why. One thing that Americans and maybe people in the world as a whole, and this has frustrated me for a while now, no system is perfect. Every system will fail once in a while. And just because one time a system doesn't work as planned doesn't mean you should have all these complex mechanisms to correct for that one somewhat rare error, because those complex mechanisms have – and I'm being abstract right now, but I'm going to get specific in a minute. Those complex mechanisms have after effects, and they have their own problems, and they make things needlessly complicated, and they break down. And so just because there's an annoyance in your life right now, or just because things aren't ideal, doesn't mean you should change everything else to make this one thing ideal, because by changing everything else – then this one thing is ideal right now, but it's going to screw up a whole bunch of other things down the line. This is stupid and a bad idea. And honestly, like, well, I'll start from the Picayune and then move forward. I'm so annoyed by this promoter. He clearly is making a point. He's clearly trying to be cute, and I think he's just trying to get in the newspaper, which honestly, when you think about it, getting in the newspaper to sell tickets over COVID, which is killing people, it's pretty whack. You know what I mean? Like, pretty friggin' whack, you know? It'd be one thing if he just said, you gotta be vaccinated to come to the show, sorry. But because he's doing $999, obviously no one's gonna pay $1,000 to go see Teenage Bottle Rocket just because they're not vaccinated, right? So it's clearly a publicity stunt or a point, and to do a publicity point off a true disaster that's killing people or making many people, I think that's perverted and messed up and weak and stupid. And I'm not blaming Teenage Bottle Rocket, because while they didn't come up with the idea, though they did, I guess, agree with it once it actually happened. But listen, I mean, I don't think Teenage Bottle Rocket are bad people or should be destroyed because of it. I just think they made the wrong call here. But with regards back to the main issue, when Ticketmaster was floating this idea, myself and everyone else were like, this is horrible. This is horrible. Ticketmaster is going to take your info and store it and use it against you, which they will. Because that's what they did before, and that's what all giant companies do when they get your info. And so to open these floodgates at the DIY level, which then makes it that much more easy at the massive level for this to happen. I don't want concerts to look at my medical info. I don't want concerts to, you know, if I'm going to a concert, the only thing they need to know about me, am I over 21 if there's booze, and do I have money? That's all a promoter is entitled to know about you, if you ask me. You know what I mean? Because we have sort of abandoned the concept of privacy. And now, like I said, is where did I go when they took a photo of my driver's license? Listen, when you go to a bar now, they scan your driver's license. Like, why should the bar be able to track where I go? You know, I mean, to me, that's unconstitutional, but everyone thinks it's not, you know. The point being is here is this in of itself is a cute but stupid idea, but the ramifications beyond this COVID, if this caught on, which it might, then you will put shackles and observation and collection of data that you will never get out of you. I mean, if you look at privacy now compared to 20 years ago, it's so much less. 20 years before that, if you look at what companies know now about people compared to what they knew in 1980, and you went back in time and said to someone in 1980, like, oh, I want to sign up for cable, and like, okay, well, in 2020, when you sign up for cable, here's all the things they know about you, that person in 1980 would be mortified and would never order cable ever again. And that's just a weird example I'm giving. But so what I'm saying is this idea in and of itself is stupid, but not only is it stupid, and not only is it disingenuous and in poor taste, you know, it's letting the big bad guys get their foot in the door, which is stupid, you know. I had one thing I wanted to say, but I can't. I think it's a bad idea. Yeah, I can't remember what else I was going to say. Yeah, so anyway, those are my main thoughts. Here's what I was going to say. And then I'm going to say something else that might be insane, and you can tell me if this is insane. Yes, it's annoying that right now concerts are a little dangerous. So you know what? Instead of having all these mechanisms to correct for the three-month time period until August or the two-month time period until July or whatever, instead of building all these mechanisms which are subject to problems, let's just cool it out for two more months. And that way everything will be cool, or everything will hypothetically be cool, and we won't have to worry about the problems introduced by this stupid new idea. The other thing that I have, and I'm this last point I'm going to make, I'm not going to stick my foot in the sand and say this is the best idea ever, because maybe I'm wrong. This is just an idea I thought. Speaking strictly in the United States, right now it's very easy to get vaccines pretty much wherever you are. They have more open vaccine spots than people. Like right now, like it's not like 3 or 4 months ago where where it was filled up all the time. Now it's pretty easy to get a vaccine. And Hallie, you might know. I think you actually do know more about this than I do. But is it an insane statement to say, listen, everyone's got ample opportunity to get vaccine, so by August, then if you're not vaccinated, that's fine, but that's on you at that point. You know what I mean? Like, is that an insane thing to say?
I'm not totally sure I understand your point. Like, meaning that, like, will every single person have had an opportunity to get a vaccine by August? Is that the question?
What we're wrestling with is health versus economics, which is something that we always, you know, the speed of the highway, you know, people have to get to where they're going relatively quickly. And the faster the speed limit is, the more people die. So we decide, okay, 65 miles an hour, some people are going to die, but the benefit of getting there that much quicker is better. Whereas if it was 100 miles an hour, then way, 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 way more people die. And we say, well, that's not worth the trade-off. You know what I mean? And I didn't even come up with that. That's a George Carlin routine, you know. So the point being is, right now it seems to me, and maybe in Kansas you can't get vaccines. It seems right now on the East Coast you can pretty much get it pretty easy. So right now, you know, it's a 3 month time period before September or whatever. Is it insane to say, let's just keep it cool for another 2 or 3 months, and then by September we're not going to worry about it so much, because by then, if you want to get a vaccine, then you would have had the opportunity to do that. Is that an insane thing to say?
No, I mean, again, now you're making me question whether what I think I know, do I actually know it? Because I would have thought that at this point, no matter where you live, you've been able to get a vaccine. I thought that was what the president announced, that everyone needed to be able to get a vaccine by Memorial Day, right? I think that was the cutoff that he said. So I think everyone that I think, and listen, if someone wants to correct me, I'm not saying I'm like the foremost authority on this, but I think anyone that at this point in the States who wants to get vaccinated has had opportunity to do so.
Okay. So then my point is, instead of having all this funny business, you know what I mean? Why can't we just say, you know, by whenever you've had the chance to get the, I mean, it's not like it's in March where you couldn't get it, so you are in danger. Now, mm-hmm. If you want to get a vaccine, you can. So if you don't and you get infected by someone not wearing a mask or whatever, well, that's on you because you had the chance.
Well, I think I think this promoter, is it a he? Do I know that it's a he, or is it maybe a she? Do we know? I don't know if I know the promoter.
I will look it up. But I'm pretty sure it's a he.
I think that he did not say, I'm not trying to make a point here. He simply said, if I remember correctly, we're not telling you what to do. You know, and I think he very much is trying to make a point. And I think it's like actually a pretty funny way to make that point. I got a chuckle out of this. I think it's a way of saying, like, do the right thing. We want vaccinated people at the show. If you haven't gotten vaccinated, and you're going to be around other unvaccinated people, and you're possibly turning this event into a super spreader event, the promoter's saying, I don't want anything to do with that. If you're vaccinated, come to this show. If you're not vaccinated, I really don't want you to come to the show. And I'm going to come up with a funny way to tell you that, you know? I can't really liken it to the Ticketmaster thing, because they're not asking for your medical history or that for you to do anything digitally. They're just saying, please bring your COVID card with you, which frankly, anyone could fake one of those things. But I think that the promoter very much is just kind of trying to make a point, not telling people what to do, but just saying at this event, we'd like you to be vaccinated. Please be vaccinated if you come to this event. that is what we would prefer. It doesn't feel Big Brother to me. If people really don't want to get vaccinated, then they don't have to go to this punk show. And that is not like, oh my God, your rights as a human are being taken away. It's just like, sorry, you just have to sit out a punk show. Like, sorry, you know, it just doesn't seem like that big a deal to me. I thought this was pretty funny, to be honest. I don't have any problem with this. There's no real way of enforcing it. Again, if people want to fake their COVID card, I don't think they're going to have some like government official at the show making sure that I didn't really have a problem with this. So I thought it was funny. Where do you fall on this?
Well, like the whole thing is it's just this one show. This is the only show on your tour where this price scheme is in effect. All the other ones are just like, I think they're one or two are doing temperature checks or something. But other than that, it's just, you know, wear a mask and it's limited capacity. So there's room for like distancing and stuff, which I think is great. With this, I can see how it could be used by like larger corporations to be like, oh, it was okay for them to do this, but why can't we do that? Like, I could see them taking that angle to try to get more information out of people. But like, you just need your driver's license and your vaccine card, and they're not going to they're just going to look at your vaccine card and everything, and they're just going to look at your driver's license, make sure you look the same and you're the same person or whatever. So I don't really see that big of a deal doing that, because again, I've had to show my vaccination record to get to continue going to school and all this kind of stuff, and they just look at it and it's like, okay, you're good to go. So it's not like they're getting your doctor's phone number and they're not going through all of your medical records. It's just like they're just checking one thing. So I think it's okay. And again, if you didn't want to go to the show, if you didn't agree with what they were doing, they do have other shows in Florida. They do have other shows like on the tour. So yeah, I thought it was an interesting thing, like, whoops, with the prices. I thought it was interesting how they did that, and you know, kind of to get around the, oh, if you're not vaccinated, don't come here kind of thing. So yeah, those are my thoughts on it.
I didn't think, John, I have to say, I disagree with the like, oh, is this like somehow like disrespectful to do this as a publicity stunt? Because I mean, if anything, it's a publicity stunt. Just telling people, like, just get vaccinated. Do you know what I mean? That's the publicity stunt. If anything, I don't think this is like the conversation around this isn't like, I guess the conversation is around the Teenage Bottle Rocket performance, but it's more around like, are you doing the right thing? The publicity is like, are you doing the right thing? Are you getting vaccinated? Are you taking care of the people around you? Are you taking some responsibility for this global health crisis? Are you part of the solution? Like, if you are, great. Come pay a cheap price for this punk ticket. If you're not part of the solution, like, please stay away or pay me $1,000 or something ridiculous like that. You know, I think if anything, the publicity is in the right direction. It's in a respectful direction in regards to the tragedy that we've all been having to deal with for the last year and a half. You know, that's my perspective.
Fair enough. I just simply don't agree. I think it's self-aggrandizing, and you know, the statements by the promoter and the people associated were relatively cute, I would say. And like I said, I still stand by the slippery slope argument that, yes, if all you had to do was show your card and let you in, maybe that's fine, you know. But as a side note, and this is a very picky point that we're going to discuss in a second. However, it never stops there. You know, to get cable, you have to get your social security number. Why should they have my social security number to get friggin' cable? You know what I mean? And so it just makes people more and more relaxed at giving out information that other parties really aren't entitled to. And sure, at first they don't have a malevolent purpose, you know, but it's so easy to take that information and give it a malevolent or powerful, you know, I mean, look at the ads on your computer. You know, I'll be talking to my mom. I'll say, hey, mom, looks like you're low on cat food. You know, next time I'm at the market, I'll buy some cat food and I'll bring it over to your house or whatever. You know, and then my phone says, you need cat food? You know what I mean? And it's like, I didn't even type in cat food, you know. And
so, but like to – oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
But like to get into a show, you have to show them your ID. It has your age. It has your home address on it. It has a lot more personal information on it than just your COVID card, which all it says is whether you got a needle in your arm. It doesn't say anything else about you. And no one's writing that information down or anything. They're just asking you to just show the card.
Not yet, but when you used to go to the bar, you should just show your ID and they will let you in the bar. Now when you go to the bar, they scan your ID. You know, I'm not trying to be a paranoid guy, but I'm just saying is now we've reached the area where not only are they entitled to know are you over 21, now they're entitled to know your medical records, you know. And so I'm not comfortable with that crossing that line, you know. And I'd rather – I mean, honestly – there's that thing is, do you want safety or do you want freedom? And it definitely is a balance. And I come out on the balance here. Everyone's got the chance to get the shot. So I'd rather say, because you have the ability to protect yourself now, the burden on should be on people that want to protect themselves, not on the other side, I guess. You know?
Yeah. Well, and we're as a society, we are going to have to get to that point, right? You know, where we just say, okay, well, the people that it was important to protect themselves have done it. And the people that have decided not to, they just sort of, they've made that decision for whatever reason. And I understand that there are lots of reasons that people might not want to get it. And I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to listen to those people and understand. I'm trying, it's difficult for me, but, I don't know. Now I've lost my train of thought.
Well, anyway.
Now, here we are in the thick of it. Here we are in the thick of a political conversation yet again. But wait, John, I did want to ask you, but it's because I talked about this with a friend, and his immediate response was like, well, that's a lawsuit waiting to happen. Like, is this legal?
No. Yes. Well, actually, great question. People said you can't discriminate under the Constitution. Absolutely wrong. You cannot discriminate on protected classes. Protected classes are nationality, race, age. A state of origin. And actually, it's sexuality was not a protected class, but by now it almost is a de facto protected class. And actually, there's an interesting line of case law right now that, and it actually comes from employer law. So hypothetically, you could in federally, not in all states, because some states do have protections now, but not all states. Hypothetically, you could fire someone for being gay. But you couldn't fire someone for being a woman or a man, right? So there's an interesting line of law, and I realize this is just tangentially related. But we'll get
no,
back.
I know what I know this, and I think it's fascinating. I think you should absolutely lay it out because I loved this when I heard this.
So there's a line of employee discrimination law is all right. So fine, you can fire someone if they're gay, but you're not firing this guy because he's gay. You're firing him because he's a man that goes out with men. So you're firing him based on his sex, not his sexuality. Which is an interesting angle there, isn't it? You know,
it's so smart. I mean, like just whatever whoever the lawyers were that like were able to like pull that apart and like find that logic thread. It's like brilliant.
The other protected classes are I said race, religion. I miss religion. Physical or mental disability and veteran status. So where that could fall into is physical or mental disability. And honestly, like whenever on Facebook you see someone say, this is definitely a violation or this is definitely not a violation, they probably have no idea what they're talking about because law is so murky in all of those areas. Like the sexuality and the sex one right there is the best example. You know what I mean? It's like, no, I fired him because he was gay. No, you fired him because he's a man that kisses men. You know, so it's very
– Right, whereas you would not fire a woman who kisses men. So therefore, it's discrimination based on sex.
Right. So that being said, would the – could the shot – be with regards to physical disability. Now, if you had someone that for – there are valid reasons why people can't get a COVID shot. You know, I think that's probably a very small percentage of people, but those people do exist. So what if this promoter was billing them $999? Well, that would be a constitutional lawsuit. However, that being said – aside from those things that I mentioned, you can discriminate against people. Let's say you have a restaurant and you hate purple shoes, and someone comes in and they're wearing purple shoes. You're allowed to not serve them. Or let's say someone comes in and they have Sprint, not AT&T. You're allowed to say, if you have Sprint, I'm not going to serve you because I hate Sprint, you see. But then where that also gets tricky is, like, sometimes nightclubs will say, no sports jerseys because we're a classy place. Sometimes that gets attacked. Under a federally protected class, because you're saying you're just using basketball jerseys as a proxy for African Americans, because at least in the 90s and 2000s, that was a popular style for African Americans in Philadelphia and New York.
Ah, basketball jerseys.
The answer is anybody going to sue this little dick? This little knucklehead? No, because it's just some little thing. But you know. Is there area for attack there? Yes. Do I see wide sweeping changes to our law because of COVID vaccination things? I just don't see that happening. You know what I mean? Particularly since sexual orientation isn't even federally a protected class
protected yet. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, listen. Now that we've solved all those problems, let's solve another band's problem. The Cro-Mags, they've got problems. They've had problems since 1983. They still got problems. A little while ago, we reported that, quite surprisingly, the Cro-Mags' seminal album, Age of Quarrel, one of the greatest hardcore records of all time, was on the Record Store Day 2021 release list, which was really, really surprising to me, because that album, which was originally released on Rock Hotel /Profile – no, Profile, not Rock Hotel. Why did I say Rock Hotel? Is Rock Hotel associated with Profile? No, just Profile. I'm wrong. It's Profile. Anyways, that record, which was only released on Profile, I guess because the Cro-Mags played the Rock Hotel record release show. Anyways, I'm getting off track. The Age of Quarrel was released on Profile, right? And so literally since the very release of that, the ownership has been in dispute. Who owns the Cro-Mags Age of Quarrel record? Does Profile own it, which is now owned by Sony? Does Harley Flanagan own it? Does John Joseph own it? Or does Paris own it? Or does some other party own it? And literally, throughout the decades, there have been various authorized – or actually, various ish releases that are not bootlegs, because a bootleg is someone issuing a record when they know they don't have the rights to it. Rather, there are many releases of Age of Quarrel by people that are asserting rights to it, even though the rights are cloudy. One of the most famous ones was the 2010 Mightier Than the Sword release, which I believe was a John Joseph release. However, there's also the like 90s version called Beef Ain't Over Records, which I believe was a Paris release, but I'm not sure. Then there's the Cash Only release, which I think was the Harley release. At any rate, so it was very surprising to see that, you know, Record Store Day releases are very official. There's so many people that have so many controls over this thing. Everything that's going out through Record Store Day is pretty much, you know, this record company's owned this record for 50 years and no one can challenge it. And then we saw Age of Quarrel. I'm like, wow, Age of Quarrel's there. So Harley Flanagan put out a public post and he said, we didn't put this out. We don't even know who's putting this out. And we're not getting paid and we have the rights to it. So I'm going to get it back. And so everyone in the band can get paid, even people I don't like right now. And then recently the record was taken off the Record Store Day 2021 list, which shows Harley is getting results. And I will say Harley is very impressive for many reasons, but his law skills are extraordinary. And I'll tell you why. Because – you know, for years and years and years, John Joseph and Harley were battling over the Cro-Mags name. And then when it came out that the reason the Misfits reunited was because Glenn Danzig sued Jerry Only, and then they came to terms with it and are quote, pals again or whatever, Harley saw that, and then he sued John Joseph for the name of the Cro-Mags, and Harley got the name back from the Cro-Mags, which I thought everyone assumed that John Joseph was going to have that name forever because he had been performing under that name for 10 years or so without Harley. And to Harley's credit, Harley said, I want the name back. He filed a lawsuit, and he got the name back. Now, he's trying to get the record back. I don't think he filed a lawsuit, but I'm sure he sent a nasty letter. And now the record has been taken to a state of limbo where before it was some party saying, I have the right to do this. I think Harley's going to come out on top again. So I'm not surprised by this, and I am amused and enthused by it.
Okay, so I was going to ask you, because I wasn't clear totally what the implications of this were. Like, so this announcement means that just that it's been thrown into question whether this thing is actually going to get released, or is there like, I don't know if I am understanding how Record Store Day works, but there's no way in which it's like this thing is coming out definitely, but the people that organize Record Store Day have decided not to make it a part of Record Store Day. That's not like an option, right? This means just that the release itself might not come out at all.
Record Store Day itself is a legal entity. Yeah. Record Store Day itself is now aware. Hypothetically speaking, and the evidence backs this. I wasn't going to reach out to Harley, but you know what? I don't need the props right now. And I love Harley. Harley's the man. I mean, I am extremely pro Harley. So listener, I am a big fan of Harley, and Harley has done Punk News Asylum a couple of times, which I believe Hallie knows fully well what that is. But anyways, that being said, Harley's cool. So it is my understanding that Harley sent a letter to whoever was pressing this record, which is probably Sony, but it might be somebody else that maybe licensed it from Sony. And he probably also sent a letter to Rex Store that he says, well, this is copyright infringement. And as a distributor, you're also liable for copyright infringement, because a distributor, even if they don't know something's a bootleg, is technically liable for copyright infringement. So Record Store Day probably is like, well, you know, we don't need this. We don't need this. You know, we don't need these problems. So they probably took it off their list. Another question that a commenter pointed out is, as of now, records are already showing up at record stores for Record Store Day. Does that mean there's like 5,000 of these press just sitting somewhere?
Oh, yeah. I wonder. How do we find out?
time to start breaking open some warehouses and going through it box by box. And more. Well, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Was that Hallie?
No, I mean, I don't know what I was going to say. I was just going to try to fill the space.
And more, what's your stance on Age of Quarrel? Who's going to win the battle? Harley, JJ, Paris, or Sony?
I hope Harley wins it, and I hope that this finally, like, gets settled and finally gets put to rest, and people can, like, actually get money from it and actually be paid and have, you know, all the good stuff that they should have had for years. Didn't they re-released an album, didn't they?
Harley in Europe re-released Hard Times in an Age of Quarrel, which is the very good double live album from the mid-90s from the first classic era Cro-Mags reunion.
Okay, because I saw that and I was like, is this a sign of things to come, you know? Like, is it, like, starting to roll out more re-releases, so this will be, like, the next thing? Like, it's taken off of Record Store Day, that means the rights are going to be all figured out and restored, and then, like, fully re-released soon.
I think that is what I suspect that it's so – I mean, I think – Sony owns what used to be Profile. So that means either Sony owns the records or they license it to somebody to press, or it's a straight up bootleg, which I don't think it is. And so I think Sony, which was not around, which didn't own this during, you know, the classic era, Sony's got so many millions of records, they probably were completely unaware of the conflict. So they probably would just had their people go through and say, let's put this out, you know, we'll make some money off it. And then they didn't realize that it's a thorny bush. And this is just my pure speculation. So Harley sent them a letter, says, listen, you got problems. So I think Harley's probably going to work out some kind of settlement with Sony, bring it back, and then release it. That's a guess. We'll see. And if Harley's track record has proven, he gets what he wants. So
I'm sure when he started a hardcore band, he wasn't expecting to have to know so much about, like, legal rights. It's like, Not all the things when you start a band, you don't know how well in this day and age, you don't know how much time you're going to spend sitting in front of a freaking computer, like emailing about punk, you know, like it's like all these. So yeah, just to say, I don't think this band probably didn't realize how many legal problems were headed their way when they were like, let's start a hardcore band.
Emor, tell us about Les Abus Grandes.
Yes, okay, so they are a band. They're not a solo artist, they're a band.
Commenter Dick. A lot of commenters said this is just one person, and Emor was right and they were wrong. Hit him, Em, hit him.
Bam. Yeah, don't come after me. I have my facts, so we're good. So, they're a band. So the picture that's on Punk News is the single art, and it features the front woman, Tyler Simone Moulton. So that's the story with that. But they do punk, they do indie, they do new wave. They have their own unique blend of everything, which sounds really cool. So they released two singles in 2020, and this is their first, I believe this is their first single in 2021, and it's called Not Sweet Enough. So I think they described it as like a feminist fuck you song or something. But like, it's really catchy. It's really good. Her voice is good. And I liked the lyrics. I liked how everything fit together. I thought it was interesting. And I think they're going to be releasing more stuff like later on this year. So it'll be cool to see what they do and how they evolve and continue to evolve. What were your guys' thoughts on it?
I mean, yeah, evolving is like definitely like the word of the day, like when it comes to this band, right? Because they're like sound like so many things. Like I feel like I like some of the punkier stuff. In fact, I think I played a song of theirs on the podcast. I think I played We Fucking Suck, or I guess they call it what WWF. Why don't I know the alphabet? WFS. Which I like, but to be honest, like I think I like this band the best when they're doing sort of like a poppy kind of, I feel like they have some stuff that sounds almost like Santi Gold, if anyone like knows that, like indie artist.
The obscure platinum selling indie artist Santi Gold.
I don't know, it's like, you know what it is, John, that's totally invalid. Yes, thank you for making fun of me for that.
Formerly known as Santo Gold and formerly in a punk band.
I love her. I love her. I guess it's just, I was like reading a lot of like the like punk news comments today, and it just made me question some of the people. I don't know. Yes, so you're right. Yes, Santi Gold is famous. I don't have to say for anyone who knows Santi Gold. For anyone who knows this band called the Beatles, but I kind of like when they're doing like an indie dreamy pop thing. But definitely, clearly, like as songwriters, they're experimenting with doing stuff that's a little harder. And I find it all very interesting. And I'm like interested to see where this band is going. John, is this for you?
Yeah, actually, I actually kind of really dug it. I dug this. I didn't love this, but I liked it, and I think it's got real promise. I definitely liked how it kind of had a new wave and almost Blondie aspect, and then sometimes like with the percussion, it's almost kind of like hip hop. I dig this. To me, this is like kind of, I mean, maybe it was a little poppier than I would have liked, but that's cool. Sometimes straight up pop. I mean, it's not straight up pop, but it's leaning towards straight up pop. But it's got the new wave, it's got the punk backbeat. So I dig this. I think it's got real promise, and I think that this could lead to an excellent, interesting album. And I think a lot of punkers or music writers my age are like, oh, I'm so jaded, you know. I hate everything. I actually like this a lot, and I think this is one of the many ways that punk is going that is interesting, new, and fresh. I don't need another street punk band. I don't need another DB band. Although I love Discharge, I don't need another band that sounds exactly like Discharge. This, to me, which has the backbone of first wave punk, but also adds in some new, a new coat of paint, if you will, a new facade, some new energy, I dig it.
I think it's really funny that you like mentioned specifically like, yeah, that there seem to be like older and then more modern influences at play here, because I think if you look at this band, like the two founding members, so it's like the singer and the bass player, and they're like wildly different ages. I mean, he looks like he might be actually like 20 years older than her. It's maybe not quite that much. And then when I was reading like a interview with them, it seems like they know each other because he worked with her mom. Like they're really not in the same generation. Like, and then I think they connected as music fans and lovers and writers because they saw each other at like a concert of like a Pains of Being Pure at Heart concert. But like, I think it's so funny that you said that, John, because I think that is what you're hearing with this band, is like, there's definitely, like they're coming from two different directions. And I feel like in each song, you just try to figure out like where on the spectrum of their tastes, like where did they decide to meet like on this song, you know? And it's why the band, I think, has a like, to me, like almost a little bit of like multi-personality disorder, but not in a way that's like not really bothering me right now. I like that their stuff doesn't all sound like, the songs don't all sound like each other.
You know, what's interesting, I mean, we talked about, Santigold, and it's interesting how this is kind of on an obscure indie label, because Santigold was also on an obscure indie label called Atlantic, which, you know, a lot of the listeners might not have heard of, you know, pretty obscure label. Fun fact,
I'm just going to keep roasting me about this. It's fine. I can take it.
I forgot the name of Santigold's punk band. It was called Stiffed. I didn't realize that Chuck Treese was in that band. Of course, Chuck Treese is kind of a famous Philly drummer. He's been in McRad. He was in Underdog for a little while, a whole bunch of bands. So I didn't know. So that's cool. All right. Anyways, so yeah, I think this is cool, and I dig it. Let's talk about some old school punk stuff. And actually, I'm quite proud of this article. So recently, the original art for the back of the Misfits record Earth AD's Wolf's Blood, so technically the art for Wolf's Blood, went up on eBay, and it sold for – this is the original ink and pencil art. It sold for $35,000. It was done by an illustrator called Anthony Stockard, and that's all that people knew. And so I – and I'm going to brag – well, I'm not going to brag here, but I'm going to tell my story here. I went on the eBay site, and I saw that it sold from Canada. And then I Googled Stockard's name, and I saw that he was an architect in Canada. And sadly, I saw that he passed away in 1999. Therefore, it appears that this is his family or the estate selling the image drawn by him. Actually, it wasn't for the back of the Misfits record. It was for an obscure zine that Danzig saw and then got permission to put on the back of his record. And so $35,000 for some art, which is more than most artists get, but lower than certainly the most expensive art out there. So the question is A, do you think this is cool art? And B, is this an appreciation of art and shows that people do care about art? Or is this just people paying so much for something that is cool but not great, whereas other artists that are amazing artists are literal starving artists? And more, where do you stand?
I thought the art itself was good. But there was like writing on it, and the back didn't look like, it looked like it had damage of some kind. Again, I don't know if it was just age or what, but like I thought it looked like a little bit of water damage. No, I thought the actual art itself was pretty cool, and it'd be kind of neat to have that, like, just hanging up, because you'd always have something to talk about, you know, and then you could kind of judge the people who are coming into your home, how they react to it, you know, in one way. I really hope that it was a family member or a friend who sold it, and not just somebody who like found it and was like, okay, cool, this is going to make me some fast cash. I hope it went back into his family or his friends. And then another thing I thought of was, like, what if they whoever bought it, and then now it's up as, like, an NFT, a picture of it, and then it's just everywhere, and they get their money back. I don't think that's going to happen, and I hope that doesn't happen. But I think this is cool, and I think it's interesting to see, like, art that was used in a punk context sell for, like, a fair amount of money. You know, it's really interesting to see how, like, how much it's gone up in value, I guess, for lack of a better way to say that. Hallie, what did you think?
I guess I just don't know that much about art. Like, it didn't ever occur to me that anyone was paying this much for this because they, like, necessarily love the art. I just, like, assumed it was someone who's just, like, a huge, huge Misfits fan and loves this record and, like, needed the original copyright. But I don't know whether it's – I don't know. Is it good art or not? Or does, like, that even matter? I feel like it's – right? It's, like, nostalgia. Like, the like someone's paying $35,000 for, like, the nostalgia of it, right? You know? I thought it was funny. Like, I felt bad for the person that, like, it sold for, like, $35,100.
Yeah.
And, like, I felt bad for, like, the person that bid, like, just $35,000 and then, like, what, like, missed owning it by just, like, $100. Like,
you know, I didn't even think. I was thinking as an actual auction where it's like $35,000. Why are you know? But yeah. eBay is a timed auction. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
On the other hand, do we want to feel bad for somebody that's got $35,000 to blow on a picture? You know what I mean?
You're right. I don't feel bad. Yeah. Like, no. John, who is this? Who's paying $35,100 for this?
Right. Amazing question, because I was having this conversation with Brad Logan the other day, who I co-wrote Architects of Self-Destruction, the World History of Leftover Crack, out August 10th via Rare Bird Books, which you could buy at rarebirdbooks.com. We were having this exact discussion, and that it's like, you know, Misfits' first single, Cool Cough, is now worth $15,000. Somebody recently paid like $17,000 Teen Idols or Minor Threat 7-inch, I forget which. Who is this person that's dropping $15,000 on a Misfits 7-inch? Is it a punker that is really not being smart with his money and you know, only has, say, $20,000 to his name, and he's spending $15,000 to buy this record, which is – I don't think it's going to go up in value? Or is this just some super rich guy that to him $15,000 is nothing? But then I said to Brad, I said, but you know, two jobs ago, our clients were extremely rich people. I mean, millionaires, but like millionaires, like rich, rich people. And they are not reckless with their money at all. I'll never forget a case. I got this dude $70,000, and there was like literally like $12 in like mailing fees on it or something, and he was bitching about it. I'm like, bro, I just got you $70,000, and you're $12. I wanted to kill the guy. I mean, he was a prick anyways, you know what I mean? It's like, so rich people don't throw money around like that, you know. But then Brad said, yeah, but how about the rich people's kids, you know, which I'm like, So my guess is that's who's buying this, but I really would like to know who's buying this. But then sometimes it's like really wacky too, like sometimes like a Keith Haring, like someone will buy like a Keith Haring like painting for like, you know, I don't know, $100 million, and no one knows where it went, and it turned out it was like some Russian oligarch. It's like, yeah. Why does he want a Keith Haring? What's he doing with it?
Yeah. You
know? So I don't know. I would really like to know, you know. Like who's buying $15,000? I can see just some I don't want to say schmuck, but I can see someone spending $500 unwisely on a first press Cro-Mags record or something, you know. But $15,000? You have to have $15,000 to spend it unwisely, you know? So
is there anything, John, that you can think of that, like, were it to go on sale tomorrow, like, that you would spend, like, an irresponsible amount of money on just to have it in your collection? Like, is there anything you can think of that you just, like, want that badly?
Well, it depends what you define as irresponsible. Certainly, I've never spent $1,000 or more for a record. You know, hypothetically, I could, but I probably would not, you know. So, all right, so let's set the number at $2,000. Mm-hmm. Is there a record that I would spend $2,000 on? The answer is No, unless I know I would know I could get my money back for it were I to sell it. For example, very recently, a Misfits of Death Church went up on eBay, the test press of Death Church, and I'm like, oh, you know, I'm gonna go all in on this one, man. I'm gonna spend $1,500 and get this, and then maybe I'll flip it, you know. But it went up for like $2,000. And I'm like, listen, if I want to invest, if I want to invest $2,000, buying records is not the way to invest. Or I might have the temptation just to keep it. But do I really need a test press of Death Church? I'm not even going to play it. I'm going to look at it, you know? and it's a black and white record, you know? I'm like, you know, so I certainly have spent $100 on a record before. That's about my limit, you know what I mean? If I saw something super crazy, I would consider going more. But it's difficult to imagine. Like, let me try to think here. Like I would spend stupid amounts of money on Nick Blinko art up to a point, but I wouldn't spend more than $1,000 on Nick Blinko art unless I believed that it was an investment that would go up in value. If it's Nick Blinko art that I'm buying for me to look at, I would consider spending $1,000. But above that, no. How's that for an answer?
Great answer.
Yeah. So there you go. All right, very good. Should we play some Misfits or should we play some Rudimentary Peni? Let's play some Rudimentary Peni. They got a new record out. It's really good. It's called The Great War, and this is Rudimentary Peni. You know, the annoying thing is 15 years ago, you could go into like these coffee shops in England and buy Nick Blinko art for like $75. And now they're like $5,000 to like $10,000 each.
Boy.
And I'm glad he's getting paid because he should, you know, but I'm mad at myself. One of the biggest regrets that I have, when I was in law school, Jesse Michaels had an amazing art show in Berkeley, and he had these gigantic paintings for $800 each. And at the time, you might as well said to me, that's like $30,000, John, you know, or $100,000 or whatever. You know, I didn't have $800 to throw around on paintings at the time. And so I didn't buy one. And I've regretted it ever since. I honestly should have got a credit card and just defaulted on the credit card and let him sue me because I didn't have much at the time, you know, and kept the painting. You know what I mean? Because now Jesse Michaels, I was lucky enough to buy some of the smaller things, which he sold online later on. I actually had some punk news events. We gave away some Jesse Michaels paintings, which I hope those people realize what they have, because they really got it for their $1 lottery ticket, which went to St. Jude's Children's Cancer Research, which I had to pull out of people quite frustratingly. I'm like, listen, you could win a Jesse Michael. I'm ranting here, but I don't even care. At punk news events, we used to, by we, I mean me, I would sell raffle tickets for Jesse Michael's paintings for $1 each. And people, for children's cancer, to me, that's the best charity there is, children's cancer. You can't argue with it. You know?
You really can. Nobody's going to be mad at you raising money for children with cancer.
St. Jude's has been proven to be a legitimate thing that helps out many, many people. Their funds go to where they're supposed to go. And children with cancer never did anything to anybody, and they've got one of the worst diseases in the world. You know, you can't argue with that charity. And people were so stingy. I was like, I would go around like bothering people, say, it's a Jesse Michaels painting for children with cancer. Give me a stupid dollar, you know. And then, and people spend like $6, $7 on beers. But what also, and maybe I'm going to be a little edgy here, but I'm just going to say it really did annoy me, is if I had a charity, Books for Prisoners, people would hurl money at me. You know what I mean? Which, Books for Prisoners is good. I think prisoners should be educated. That being said, between prisoners who have done bad things, generally speaking, or children with cancer, one charity should be overblown with donations. But that's just not people's mindset. And I sort of think I know why, but I don't really know why.
I'm not going to speculate on that.
Yeah, well, so anyways.
But wait, so would Jesse donate the paintings? And
no, I didn't want to be a dick about it. So I would email Jesse. I would say, Jesse, we want to do a charity, so I want to buy a painting from you. But the reason I'm asking, instead of just buying it from you, and I would spend my own money to buy it, is because maybe you're not cool with St. Jude's because it is a Christian organization technically. So maybe you don't want to be associated with that. But he was totally cool. He's like, nah, that's cool. You know what I mean? So I would buy a Jesse Michaels painting, which at the time were cheap, and then we would raffle them off. And if you were one of the lucky winners that has that, your $1 investment did very well for you, listener.
I love it.
Yeah, wow.
So anyway, speaking of some, so anyway, the point, well, actually, not to drag this out, is I think at the last event I didn't do it because it got to be just a hassle. Like I got like $82 the last time, and like I'm like, for all the headache and effort, I'm gonna just give the $82 to St. Jude's myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't like, yeah. Like, but I did enjoy making something good at, like, sure, we're having a fun concert, but at least we're helping somebody on their plane ticket to go visit their sick kid or something, you know, a little bit, you know, at least we're doing some good, you know, but it's such a headache and such a burden, and it bums people out. I stopped doing it. I don't know if that's the right thing or not. You know what I mean?
No, but, you know, I hear you. If you feel like, yeah, it's just, if people don't want to donate, you can't force them to.
But then the counterattack is, then, John, you're doing it for the wrong reason. The idea to donate, to get money for kids with cancer, isn't to make John feel good, and it's not to make John's life easier. The point is to help out families with sick kids, you know? So if you have an hour or 2 hours worth of headaches, well, at least you're helping them with their stupid plane ticket. Not stupid plane ticket, their plane ticket, or their meals for the week. So, yeah, you could be uncomfortable for an hour, John, if you help them with their plane ticket. How about that, you selfish little prick? You know what I mean? So I don't know. You know, but then I can say, well, then I'll just give him $100. You know what I mean? I don't know. But then it'll be, well, then you could give him $200, John. You could give him your $100 and the $100 you collect. You know? But on the other hand, I hit on the thing. It's like, everybody, thanks for donating to St. Jude's. Here's the $82 receipt. You know, I feel like a real jackass, you know? So
I love this hypothetical person that's really like holding your feet over the fire about whether you raise money for cancer or not.
I got to figure out but the other thing, the bummer with raffles is everybody, raffles really are the worst, because everyone's like, oh, I really, like, wow, is Jesse Michael, like, some people are super psyched about it, and they'll buy like 10 or 20 raffle tickets or 50, you know, and they'll be like, I can't. The problem with raffles is, say 100 people enter, only one person goes away happy, and 99 people go away disappointed, you know what I mean? So it's rough, man, it's rough. Mm-hmm. I should rob a bank and give that to St. Jude's. All right, listen, let's talk about something that's interesting. Sparks. Sparks is going to release a documentary on June 18th. It's called The Sparks Brothers, and it's out via Focus Features. And it appears to sort of be a history of the band, but I think the trailer kind of suggested that it's sort of more like the Minutemen documentary, Rejam Econo, which, while it has history aspects to it, it's more people just reflecting on the importance of the band. People appearing in the movie are the Sparks Brothers themselves, Ron and Russell Mao, Jane Wielden of Go-Go, Steve Jones of Sex Pistols, Weird Al, New Order, Flea, Beck, Jason Schwartzman, Neil Gaiman, and many, many, many more. I tell you, Sparks is a band, I've got two of their albums, and I enjoy it, but Sparks is a very weird, very dense band with many, many, many releases, and it's not a band, it's kind of like Ween, in that you kind of don't get it, and then you get it, and then you love it, and you want to hear everything, but it's, or like Frank Zappa. It's kind of hard to just get a little Sparks, because they have so many different facets, because they are complex and so clever and intelligent, that you kind of have to just let it come to you. I'm excited for this documentary because while I have two Sparks albums, I enjoy them. I don't love them, but I feel I should, and I think I will love them eventually. And maybe I'm kind of holding off so I can have a Ween or a Frank Zappa moment, you know, later on, because you, as the older you get, the fewer times you have those moments because you've heard more music. So I'm excited for this. I think this looks cool. And I really think it's cool how it just goes to show, despite the weirdness and cleverness of Sparks, they're kind of just two goofballs goofing around having fun. So I'm excited for this. And I'm excited to learn more about Sparks, which I don't know that much about.
Do you know Sparks? I didn't really know that much about Sparks.
No, I watched the trailer and I thought it looked really good, and like there were a lot of like, you know, cool people who were going to be interviewed, and then like the director seems really neat too, and just everything. So I went on YouTube and I just started watching like videos, like their videos, and oh my gosh, they are, no two songs sound the same. That it was really, really cool. Just it was nuts. And then they did a cover, or they didn't do a cover, they did their song This Town Ain't Big Enough for Both of Us with Faith No More, and I watched that, and that was really cool. I think the best was I watched the video for Lawnmower, and it's just like a lawnmower and they're talking about that, and it's somebody who just like cuts his grass, and then his girlfriend leaves him because it's like it's a lawnmower or me kind of thing. So I'm gonna look way more into them because it was interesting. It was really cool,
right? Like this trailer is like, so I think I probably really only know like cool places, like the song that they do with Jane Wildland. I feel like that's the Sparks song that I'm just like, okay, I know that's Sparks. Oh yeah, and I know that
Stop the Clock. Stop the Clock.
Do I know Stop the Clock?
Or Beat the Clock. Beat the Clock.
No, I know the one that This Town isn't big enough for the two of us. I know that one. But like I'm with you, John. Like I think this band has like a big, giant, sweeping, intimidating catalog. Some of it's really like just kind of like avant-garde and off-putting, and some of it's like so intentionally like new wave, poppy, kind of corny that's also kind of like not a little off-putting, but like the trailer, it makes you feel like the movie is going to give, sometimes I think with bands like this, you need something to anchor you. You need something to just like, you need a filter to listen to everything through to understand the music a little bit better. And I feel like this is that's exactly what this movie is going to provide. Like, I feel like, like what you said, John, like, I feel like I'm going to watch this and it's going to like be a really good entryway for me into like understanding why everyone is so like gaga about this band, where I get how funny and weird and clever it all is, but I don't necessarily want to like sit down in my house and like listen to it all the time, you know? But maybe that would change after this, because like I said, you just kind of need something to like anchor you in it. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I'm with you 100. I agree with you 100%. It's like you listen to it, it's kind of funny, it's kind of weird. It's like, all right, but I don't know if I want to listen to all the 97 other albums, but people do, you know. And so maybe this will help me understand it. Also, I will say it is cool that of all the feuding brothers in music, you know, Kinks, Beach Boys, Amoebix, you know, it is
Oasis.
Cool that
the Sparks,
Oasis, perfect, best example ever. It is cool that these two brothers have been doing music for like 40 years and they're still totally cool with each other. That's cool, you know?
Because like, are they the only people, like, is each of them the only one that's cool with the other on the whole planet? They're kind of like just really on their own wavelength. I think the movie looks fucking amazing. Like, even if you don't love this music, like, I just feel like that's what a good documentary is. It invites you into some weird world that you didn't know you were interested in, and then 10 minutes into the movie you're like, I care so much about this. Like, that seems like what this movie is gonna do, you know?
Well, speaking of someone else that pulls other people into their world, perhaps the less favorable results, Morrissey. He's releasing a new album. It's called Bonfire of Teenagers. It's when is it going to come out? Who knows? On what label? Who knows? The reason being is Morrissey completed his 3-album cycle with BMG, and he's now without a label. So he says that he will sell the record to whatever label pays him the most, and he issued a typically Morrissey-esque statement, "The worst year of my life concludes with the best album of my life." I have strong feelings, so I'll kick it off, because I know Morrissey's a very contentious person, particularly on the Punk News podcast. I'm a big Morrissey fan. I think Morrissey is a great and fantastic artist, and I think he's a total weirdo. And I used to love to get in the pit and fight on behalf of Morrissey. When he would cancel shows, when he would be a diva, and when he would frankly just be a total weirdo, people would be like, aha, Morrissey's canceled another show. I'd be like, you just don't get it. He's weird. He's insane. You just want to hear him sing love songs, but that's not who he is. Have you heard Ganglord? That's about how much he hates cops. Have you heard Bullfighter Dies? It's about him clapping while the bullfighter gets gored by the bull. Animal rights. You don't get how weird and how much like he's crass as sung by Frank Sinatra. Morrissey's the man. And then he started getting he was always weird, but then he started getting kind of not cool weird, kind of amoebic style, which was bumming me out. I'm not going to reiterate it, but Morrissey said some stuff that's been very much on the edge, and some people have said that he's gone over the edge. My personal perspective is that the greater the artist you are, and the weirder you are, as long as you make great art. Well, actually, the greater the artist you are, the more free passes you get. For example, let's use Danzig. People love the doggone Danzig for playing late on a show because he won an onion soup or whatever. Is that lame? Yeah. But you know what, though? He's made so much amazing art. He's such a weirdo. Everybody has a bad day. Maybe he was having a bad day. And do we give him credit for doing a show the day his mom died? Do we give him credit for hanging around and signing every autograph after his movie, which was terrible, and people laughed at through the whole film, not with, at, and he still stuck around and signed autographs? He gets credit for that. So that being said, for me, Danzig, maybe he's used up 2 or 3 of his free passes, but he's got like 97 free passes left. You know, I think Danzig's awesome. Morrissey, he's got about 3 free passes left, you know. I still think he's an amazing artist. I think his last album, I Am Not a Dog on a Chain, was an absolute masterpiece. I think it's probably the 4th best album he ever did. I think World Peace and None of Your Business might be the 1st or 2nd best album yet. I thought it was astoundingly good, but everyone hated it, and I don't know why. I thought it was an amazing album. But that being said, Morrissey now, for me, has got the same problem as John Lydon. He's walked too close to the line, and I can't risk myself fighting on his behalf. 5 years ago, I would get in the pit and fight on behalf of Morrissey and laugh and revel in the battle. But now that Morrissey's kind of going down and he's not self-correcting, if he's going to go down, don't come to John to pull you out. That's where I'm at. I'm still going to enjoy the music. If he gets creepier, I might enjoy the music less. But for me right now, he's teetering on the edge, but I'm not letting go yet. But he's getting close. That's my perspective.
Morrissey, watch your step. You're about to lose the faithful, the faithful John Gentile. Even that's extreme. Morrissey's pushed you.
He's definitely tipped over in some racist statements. He hasn't said anything explicitly racist, but he's walked that line so closely. And he used to walk not the racist line, but other lines, you know, with regards to suicide and, you know, animal rights. And you're like, I'm not exactly sure what he's saying, and he's not clarifying himself. It's like, that's the mastery of Morrissey. But racism, is that the thing we need to – you know what I mean?
No. And it's such a betrayal. It just makes me so angry, you know? It's like this – yeah. I'm sure I've vented about this on the podcast before. But this guy that, like – you know, was supposed to be the champion of the underdog. It's like, now that he's like an old curmudgeon, now he just kind of like stomps on the underdog. I don't know. It's just like, it feels like such a betrayal to me. That being said, like I hold grudges. I really can hold on to grudges against people. But I don't hold grudges against songs. Like if a song is good, I'll like a song. If Morrissey, I mean, I'm just thoroughly disappointed by the guy at this point. And I guess what it is it's like, it's just, I can't, it does make me like the art less, you know? I can't help it. It's not like, I'm not like going out of my way. It's not like when I dislike something that an artist has done or something that they've said, I don't set out to like their music less, but there's something in my heart that's just like not as, I'm just not as excited about it. That being said, he says this is the best album he's ever made. I don't know whether to trust him on that one. But if the songs are good, I'll enjoy them. I may be mad enough at him that I will not pay for his songs, whereas I go out of my way to pay for other artists' songs. I may be that mad that I would just like choose to stream the songs. But truthfully, I haven't listened to any of his new stuff. I'm interested to hear you say, John, that last album was so great, because I wasn't like, oh, F you, Marcy, I'm not listening to a single other thing you make. It's just like, I just lost interest, right? Because I find him kind of insufferable now. So I just lost interest. I didn't seek that album out. I just kind of forgot that he'd put anything out, because I'm not as excited by him anymore because of the things that he said. But yeah, I don't know. If this is amazing, John, tell me and I will stream it. And I will happily enjoy the songs if they're as good as Morrissey claims they are.
Hallie, if Morrissey doesn't say any more whacked out statements going forward, will you reaccept him?
I just don't think that's going to happen, right? Who are we talking about here? He would have to have like a stroke and be like laying in bed unconscious at this point to stop mouthing off. He's Morrissey. He's going to continue to mouth off. I don't see him having. But okay, sorry. I'll take your hypothetical as a hypothetical. So you're not saying he apologizes. He doesn't like really correct in any way. You're just telling me as a person, he just shuts up but continues to make great music. How do I feel? Is that the question?
Not even that he shuts up. He ceases to make statements which walk that fine line.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like he's shown us what's in his heart. I just find it disappointing, you know? I don't know. If he wants to write a great song, I'll give it a chance. That's my stance. Are you... How forgiving are how many point? What was it? Was it your point system, John? He's got
103 passes.
How many free passes does Morrissey have left with you, Em?
Ooh, like a half? Not very many. Yeah, I don't know. It just stuff like that kind of. Well, it bothers me where it's like, you know, people who meant so much and then they just become like, you know. This like just disappointing, you know, like the whole John Lydon thing that really like messed me
Bummer.
Up like why, you know, that's not okay. And now this is just kind of like I was never a really big Morrissey fan, so I don't really have a stake in the game, but I'm not the world's biggest fan of him in general. So if it's good, it's good, that's, you know, but I probably won't be checking it out.
I mean, my husband has his name tattooed on his arm, you guys. And it's like a big tattoo. And he's like, what the hell do I do with this now? It's like so problematic.
People are like, hey, when did you get that tattoo? He should get another tattoo. This is when he got the tattoo.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's funny that you say that, because I think he did think of so it's just, you know, it's like, I guess Morrissey signed his arm at a show and then he just went immediately and had the tattoo done over the signature. But now he of course is a comedian. He has like a funnier way of saying it. So I'm not going to remember exactly what it was that he wanted written, but he essentially wanted it to say like 1980s. Above it, like 1980s Morrissey, like not now Morrissey, like the old Morrissey.
What he should do is put Will in front of it, because Will Morrissey apparently was an American vaudeville producer circa 1887 and 1957. So, you know, be like, I love vaudeville, you know?
Oh my God, John, that's the funniest thing you've ever said. Yes, I'm totally into that.
What I will say is I love this title. I think it's very Morrissey-esque. He's got an album title with a pun, which I can't stand. Rebel Without Applause. Morrissey, you can do better than that. Bonfire of Teenagers, great title. And one last thing I will say is it is somewhat, I guess, disheartening but also heartening in that these punkers, which used to wield a dangerous knife with such an exacting level of skill, Lydon, Morrissey, even Ice Cube, who's not punk but hip-hop, you know, as they get older, they get a little bit more wobbly with the knife. And where they used to have these very clean, biting, thought-provoking strikes, it just seems they're just reacting and kicking, you know. But on the other hand, instead of lamenting Morrissey, Maybe we should salute Jello, who has never wavered. Maybe we should salute Steve Ignorant, who has never wavered. Maybe we should salute Nick Blinko. Not that they've never wavered, because they've certainly grown and matured, but they've never sold out their core ideals, you know. And or how about Milo of the Descendants? Or how about Keith Morris of Black Flag? Or how about Ian MacKaye of Minor Threat? Although Ian gets enough props as it is. You know, I like Ian. You know what I mean? So maybe instead of worrying about Morrissey, maybe we should just say, Morrissey, you know what? If you want to come back, you can come back. But we're not going to come looking for you. In the meantime, let's have a cake party for Jello because he deserves it, you know? So.
Hell yeah.
Honestly, we do try to do that at Punk News. We do try to kind of salute the older guys that are still cool and say they're still doing cool stuff. And, of course, they don't need our help. Jello's last album, like, kicked ass. So, anyways, I've been rambling a lot. Let's do one last story, and then we'll shut this on down because we've already been rapping, like, an hour and a half.
Wow. Great.
All right, let's talk about this. This will be a quickie. Rebellion 2022 has announced this lineup, and frankly, a lot of cool bands on the lineup. Bands playing Rebellion 22 include Circle Jerks, Steve Ignorant doing a crass set, which I hope he brings to the United States, Bad Religion, Stiff Little Fingers, Coxbar, UK Subs, Stranglers, Levelers, which never really broke through in the States but are huge in Europe and the UK, Sham 69, DOA, Undertones, Exploited, Cockney Rejects, GBH, Tom Robinson Band, The Dickies, Ruts DC, Neville of the Specials, Subhumans UK, Bouncing Souls, and Moscow Death Brigade. A lot of heavy hitters, punks, at Rebellion 2022. I would say this looks awesome, but I have one minor critique.
What is that?
Where's all the young people? And I will say, this lineup is awesome. This lineup is killer. But these are all old dudes. If you look at Punk Rock Bowling, the lineup isn't as solid, but at least we got the young people in there. At least we got a mix of people. We got the Titans at the top. We got the Circle Jerks Descendants at the top. Super rad. But down below, we got the young up-and-comers. So I will say, Punk Rock Bowling, the lineup is less solid, but it is more... It is... Instead of being a museum to punk, which I would argue Rebellion is very cool, but it is a museum to punk. Punk Rock Bowling, let's salute the icons and let's keep it moving with the new people. You know what I'm saying? So that's my perspective on this. I certainly would go, but I would say to improve it, they need more younger and new bands.
Yeah, and also, I'm totally with you. I would just be reiterating what you were saying. But this looks like an amazing lineup. For certain people, I could see where this would be worth getting on a plane for, you know? I won't be getting on that plane.
As a younger person, is it a bummer if you go to, like, a festival and it's, like, all, like, it can be – and honestly, like, a lot – like, Steve Ignor is still in great shape. Circle Jerk's still in great shape. Let me see here. UK Subs, still Charlie Harper, still friggin' Charlie Harper. Yeah. DOA, still DOA. You know, a lot of these guys are still subhumans. It's still Dick extremely Lucas. Vibrant. But that being said, it can be a bummer when you go to a festival and everybody up there, the people I mentioned are still kicking ass and still, you know, still fit and still are at the top of their game for real. But it can be a bummer where it's the moldy oldies, you know, a lot of people up there, a lot of gray hair. Looking a little tired, you know. There's some bands in this bill that I won't mention because I don't want to bum anybody out, which I've seen live, and I'm like, you know. So is that a bummer as a young person am? Or are you just happy that you get to see the legends before they go away and retire forever?
I'd love to go to this. I'd love to see
there you go.
Yeah, the majority of this because it's like, you know, yeah, you have pretty much endless opportunities to see a younger band. I mean, not – kinda, but like with an older band, it's like you want to see them when they're still like in their prime, but like while they're still like good and active and they can still move around
alive,
still, yeah, have some life in them, you know, and they want to be there and everything. So like I think it'd be nuts to go see this, and just anything where there's like Dick Lucas would be amazing. I want to see the Subhumans for sure. I want to see DOA and like everyone, Steve Ignorant, the whole thing would just be nuts. I think it'd be really interesting. So I understand, like, it would be good to bring in, like, a few, like, younger bands to balance it out. But as it stands right now, I think it's pretty, pretty cool.
And I think, I'm not even being funny. I think this is a year and a half away or a year and 3 months. I think you should go. I think you should figure out a way to go, make the plan and go, get a pal or two and kick it on over and have – Because, I mean, honestly, early 20s, that is the time to kick it up and go on adventures and have fun. And this is within your grasp. And you get to go to England.
That'd be so cool. I've never been on a plane, so this would be, like, nuts.
Whoa, dude. I think Punk News should send Em as the Punk News correspondent.
Okay, well, I'll go open the coffers right now. Let's see here. Okay, and we have 73 cents.
Just opened a bag of chips.
I can make it work.
Okay, Hadley, you got a track to play?
Did I play a track?
Oh, did you?
I think I did. I did, right up at the top.
Oh, yes.
Play a track.
Okay, so this is a band that I was contacted about, and I looked into them, and they're pretty cool. So they are a Toronto-based hardcore punk band, and they're called Choices Made. So I'm going to play Greed, and that's off of their Reason for Conflict EP, and that's out now via Cursed Blessings Records. So check it out. This is Greed by Choices Made.
Don't let desire turn into greed.
Excellent selection. And more. Anything you want the listeners to know about until next week. And have you start to think about what story you are going to tell. Oh, and also, listeners, next week we're doing an album week, which I'm very excited. I love album weeks. We're each going to pick an album and talk about the album, and the other listeners are going to react to it. So stay tuned for that. And more, are you excited for album week next week? And are you contemplating what stories you're going to tell on the big story episode?
Yes, I'm very excited for album week. I think everyone's going to love my album, and I have rants about it, so I'm really looking forward to it. I'm sorting through some stories. I have some contenders that float right up to the top right now, but we'll see which ones get told for sure. But I am definitely excited for both of them. It'll be interesting to hear everyone's stories too and hear everyone's albums. So I'm looking forward to it.
Never mind me. Am I supposed to be picking out an album that I think you guys haven't heard? What's my angle on this?
Your angle is not necessarily one that we haven't heard, although I try to pick ones that people haven't heard just because it makes it somewhat more interesting. But your album, your pick isn't necessarily what you think is the best album ever. It's an album that you think is interesting and will generate a lot of conversation and is meaningful to you in a positive or negative way.
I'm into it. Cool. And wait, my stories are weird, profound.
Weird.
Funny, weird, and
sad and or poignant.
Sad and or poignant. Okay, got it. All right, I'm on it.
All right, well, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org, and we'll see you next week.
Slow. I need it quickly, and I can't let go.